Hello and welcome to Rod Squad, the urology podcast for students. I'm Parker Adams and I'm going to be doing urology, and welcome to episode 58, where I have a wonderful guest, Sarah Vidovich. She's great. She ended up applying the 2019-2020 cycle, unfortunately did not match, and is currently doing a research year and was able to match last Monday. So that's awesome. I will talk a little bit about her education first. She went to UC Berkeley for undergrad, Medical College of Wisconsin for medical school, and again, she didn't match, so this year she's completing her University of Tennessee Health and Science Center Pediatrics Research Fellowship, and she was able to match on Monday. So Dr. Vidovich, nice to meet you. Thank you for being here on this podcast. I am so excited to talk to you.
Thank you for having me.
All right. So just to start things off, I wanted to say that both Dr. Vidovich and I attended the SAU info session yesterday on not matching. And I just wanted to say that their info session was recorded, so you can find it online. And we both attended that. So when we did this interview together, we both felt like we could talk about all the different options intelligently. And before we start, I wanted to mention just some statistics that they mentioned during this presentation. So registered applicants this year, there was 528, and one out of four people didn't end up matching this year. And on average, people applied to 77 programs. They had 12 interviews, which is more than I had. And the match rate was 80% for MDs, 66% for previous seniors, and 24% for IMGs. So thank you for being here. To start off this interview, we're going to talk about your path to urology. So if you don't mind, could you talk a little bit about what made you decide on urology? And if you're in between a couple specialties, do you mind talking about how you ended up eventually choosing urology as your path?
Yeah, for sure. So I have always really loved working with my hands. Growing up, I played a lot of piano, came from a very musical family, and I always liked doing arts and crafts and DIY type projects. So I always knew in the back of my mind in medical school that I would likely end up in a procedural specialty, likely a surgical specialty. But the whole reason why I went into medical school in the first place was because I really liked the long-term relationship with patients, which is something I really got out of my pre-med clinical experiences, which were mostly like primary care clinics, internal medicine clinics, OB-GYN. Things like that. And when I rotated on general surgery, I felt like there wasn't really enough of a long-term relationship and a long-term care for me to feel really satisfied. But when I serendipitously kind of rotated on urology, I felt like that was extremely prevalent, that it was really kind of the best of both worlds, that you can operate, but you can also see your patients over and over again and kind of see how they improve and really build a long-lasting relationship with them. And then to add to that, the people I've met in urology were extremely kind, really eager to mentor, and just like really great personalities. And so I felt like I really fit in with them. And so when I discovered urology in my third year of medical school, I had never really looked back because of that.
That's awesome. It's so fun to hear people's different reasons for going into urology because they're all so similar. Like, I can relate to all those things that you just said, and those are multiple reasons why I decided to do urology as well. So, That's fun to hear.
Yeah.
So tell me about your first application cycle and what you think you did right and what, if anything, you would do differently if you had to go back and do it again.
Sure. So my first application cycle, so when I first applied, that was in 2019. And so this was way before all of this, you know, COVID-19 pandemic. So everyone was allowed to do away rotations. And I think... So I basically started in July. That was when my fourth year medical school year started. So I did my home rotation in July, and then I did another away in August, and then a second away in September, which was also the month of when the applications were due. So I submitted my application in like another city in another state, basically, which was kind of interesting. Okay. As far as like things that, maybe I'll go over the things that I did wrong, because I think there are actually fewer things I did wrong than what I did right. I think most of the things I did right, I applied very broadly. I, you know, listened to my mentor's advice. I edited my personal statement several times. I think the things that I did wrong really came down to interview skills. I think that's kind of like where I went wrong with my interview cycle. And
okay.
I think that when I interviewed, it was, you know, it was all in person, which I think is great for getting to know the programs, but I really haven't gone on that many interviews before this, just because I went to a public undergrad, so we didn't have any interviews there. And then I only went on a few interviews for my medical school. And so when it came down to my interviews for residency, I think I was very nervous. And that kind of got in the way of letting my personality shine through and letting people really get to know who I was. But then when it came to this year, I tried to really kind of take advantage of the virtual format and just use that to be able to practice with trusted advisors and friends from all over. And I think that really helped me this year in, basically securing a match and interviewing well.
Gotcha. Yeah, I found that, you know, I interviewed in person for medical school, and I almost found those interviews a lot more stressful. Being in person, I found it more difficult. And on Zoom, you're a little bit, you know, there's a disassociation there where you're just looking at your computer. So it's a little less intimidating in a way. So I found it almost easier to interview over Zoom.
Yeah, I think it kind of goes both ways. I'm sure there are people who interview extremely well in person, but then when it becomes, virtual, then it might be a little bit difficult to kind of be able to, reach out and make a connection with someone across the screen. But I think it can go kind of both ways. But I think the most important thing for anyone who's reapplying is to really kind of self-reflect on what might have gone wrong and see what they can do to improve that.
Definitely. And you don't have to answer in specifics to these questions, but I was curious, a lot of people have a lot of anxiety about board scores, the amount of research that they have. And I was curious if you could enlighten us to how much research did you have on that initial application? And sure. If you don't mind answering, like how were you scoring on your board exams?
Yeah. So my step one score was competitive for urology. And when I first applied, my step two score, I took basically after I sent in my application. So I think that kind of tells you that my step one score should have been good enough to basically not need a step two CK score on my original application. Okay. And then for research, I wasn't the most like research heavy kind of person. I sort of discovered urology pretty late. And, my priority in medical school was just kind of getting through medical school. When it came to research, that was kind of a secondary thing for me. And so I had a few projects going on and I had a few posters, but that wasn't like the biggest strength, the biggest thing that made me stick out on my application.
Okay.
The first time around.
Okay. Yeah. That's really good to hear. Do you think that at least from the perspective of a DO, we're always thinking, take step one and step two, take advantage of these opportunities to show that you're able to test as well as your fellow MDs. Do you think that not having your step two CK in any way impacted your application? From my perspective, I think it would have impacted mine if I didn't take step two.
Yeah, it's an interesting question. I don't think it would have, just because I know there's a lot of people who apply urology who do wait to take their step two CK. And I remember when I was getting advice for whether I should take CK now or if I'm okay to wait, I was kind of told, well, you can probably go either way.
Yeah.
So I think in my case, it probably wouldn't have influenced things that much. And then especially when I think about it, my first cycle, I had several interviews. I technically, in theory, to most of my advisors, had enough interviews to match. But I didn't match. So that tells me that my application was probably fine, but it must have been something after the application that maybe wasn't so great. And that makes me think that it was my interviews.
That's a great way of looking at it. If you didn't match on Monday, but you had a lot of interviews, that shows that your application was strong enough to get interviews, but maybe your interview skills weren't as strong as they could have been. So that's a great self-reflection piece of advice.
Yeah.
So tell me about the week of match. I know a lot of people are really struggling right now. I've seen some scary stuff on the Excel sheet where, it sounds like people are, riddled with depression and anxiety. And I really feel for these people. And I have some close friends that are going through it as well. And I just want to hear what you were going through. So if you don't mind telling me about what was going through your head the week of match when you weren't able to, the emotional challenges that you had to deal with, and in what ways were you able to manage those emotions?
Yeah, I would say my emotions are very similar to what other people are feeling for sure. My match day last year was on a Friday, which I think is worse than being on a Monday, because when it's on a Friday, you find out the bad news and it's like, oh my gosh, like everyone's going to be, all my mentors are going to be going home in like a few hours and they won't be able to really.
Yeah, you can't like reach any out to anybody for support. Yeah.
Exactly. And then you're just kind of like left by yourself in your apartment for a weekend. Like, what do I do? But my year was a little different because there was actually one spot left in the scramble. There's one spot that went vacant. So I remember I reached out to my mentor like pretty quickly. We were like emailing with each other, trying to figure out a game plan for hopefully getting this vacancy, just sending the application, making phone calls, things like that. But they filled their vacancy pretty quick, like over the weekend. And so obviously, clearly that didn't work out for me. But then when it came to kind of the rest of the week, I kind of had to make a lot of decisions. I made sure to basically take a day to kind of grieve, like maybe that Monday after, but I knew that I had to get back on my feet very quickly and kind of decide what the next plans were going to be. And so the options really are you can either plan to reapply for urology the next cycle. And if you do that, your options are mostly either to do a surgery prelim or to do a research fellowship. Or you can decide that you want to completely do a different specialty, which is okay too. I think it's important for people who like really want to do urology. I think it's important to kind of figure out, how much are you willing to do to get into the specialty versus getting, earlier clinical employment and kind of getting your career started. And so I kind of had to reflect about that too. And I decided that because I had a lot of interviews, I probably had a good chance at urology the next year round. And so I ultimately decided that I would keep pursuing urology. And then when it came to deciding a surgery prelim versus a research fellowship, I thought that I had a lot of room to improve my research because again, it wasn't like the best part of my application. And so I thought that would be the most appropriate thing for me to go for. But there are a lot of benefits to doing a prelim that a research fellowship doesn't necessarily offer and vice versa.
Yeah. So I wanted to hear kind of your thought process on choosing to do a research year. So it sounds like research was a little weak on your application. You felt like you had a pretty strong application outside of that. You knew you had to work on some interview skills. So a research year would have been the most beneficial for you. Am I hearing that correctly?
Yes, that's all correct.
Okay. So let's see here. So tell me a little bit about going through it the second time. So tell me about how the interviews were different, how people perceived you differently by being a second time applicant. Were there certain questions that you had to answer that you didn't necessarily have to answer the first time around? What did that look like for you?
Yeah. So interviews were extremely different. The whole cycle I thought was really different. I mean, this year they had a later deadline. It was in October. I thought that worked well for me and probably anyone who's doing a research fellowship because that meant that you can kind of get more done until October versus the September deadline. And you also have more time to kind of get to know your mentors and that at your new institution and hopefully get better letters. So that was different. Everywhere I interviewed was also completely different. And I interviewed even more broadly this time around because I knew as a reapplicant that, they say that maybe there's some sort of stigma against reapplicants. I don't know how much of it is just the stigma of applying as a MD already or how much of it is other confounding variables. It's hard to say. But I knew that the match rate would be decreased for reapplicants. And so I just made sure to really cast an extremely wide net when it came to applying. So those are kind of my two different strategies. As far as different questions, I had to make sure that I had a very good, concise, clear answer whenever I was asked, why do you think you didn't match? And so that's kind of what I told you about my interview skills. And along with that, I made sure to talk about what I was doing to improve.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's really, yeah, what were you going to say?
I'm trying to remember. I think I just forgot my other thought. The other thing is people will ask, what did you learn from the experience of not matching too? And that was something I remember I touched on my personal statement, but I also had to touch on in my interviews. But I guess that brings me to another thought. This is a little tangential.
That's okay.
I recommend for anyone who's reapplying to also talk about the experience in their personal statement, because I think it would be kind of odd if you didn't match the first time and you're reapplying to not address the elephant in the room at all. I think it's important to address that in your personal statement before you really do your interviews and such.
Right, because at least from my perspective, you're giving them this application, they know you're a reapplicant, and you'll obviously have time in the interviews to talk about the elephant in the room, but to get an interview, you need to address the elephant first, you know? So that makes complete sense why you'd want to kind of get it off the table when they're just looking at your application.
Yeah, for sure.
So looking back at everything the second time around, what do you think had the biggest impact on you being able to match the second time around?
I think I would have to say, aside from the interview sort of skills that I already talked about, I think my letter of recommendation from my research institution. And I think something that was brought up at the SAU webinar, which I thought was a great thing that someone said, I forget who said it, it was one of the physicians who are on the board of the SAU, but they said that they think that no matter what option you choose, whether it's a surgical prelim or a research fellowship or anything else, that your goal should be to be excellent in whichever choice that you make. And I think that rings really true. So, I made sure that I was making great connections with all of my research mentors. I made sure that, that my boss was extremely happy with the work that I was doing. And I think that really showed and glowed in the letter of recommendation that she wrote for me. And in all of my interviews, everyone basically said that that was an excellent, phenomenal letter of rec.
Yeah, I think that was a great piece of advice from the SAU. They were kind of saying, this doesn't start in June when your research fellowship starts. This starts today. You know, you need to start reaching out to people, hit the ground running, and really invest yourself over these next, handful of months before you apply again to really make it worth it.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. I remember when I decided I was going to do a research fellowship and when I finally secured this research fellowship, I was very eager to start research like immediately for this fellowship, even though I wasn't there. Unfortunately, because of COVID, that wasn't like quite the priority at the time because everyone was just kind of figuring out what they're going to do with PPE and are they going to institute telehealth visits? But I think now that, as long as another pandemic or something crazy doesn't come around, I definitely recommend that if people can start doing research or start reaching out to people now, that they definitely should.
Yeah. And I was going to transition into start talking about each of these options and going into them in a little bit more detail. And because you did a research year, I'll start with talking about the research year. So the benefits that the SAU was talking about was that it allows ample time to get some research produced. And it was interesting because a lot of the PDs, a lot of this is anecdotal, but they were saying that they highly value these research years with the caveat that they need to be productive. So they were saying that a research year where you produce, 12 publications, have some posters, and you're really active, and you're able to get pretty good letters of rec from your experience as well, that those are very valuable experiences applying a second time around. What they cautioned against was going into that research year and not networking, not being very active, because that's almost a red flag on your application. It's like you took this year to improve your application, but you only have, one or two publications, what happened? So do you mind speaking a little bit about how your research year went and being aggressive with your publications and how that looked for you?
Yeah, for sure. And I think that was advice from the SAU that I found interesting too, because I think it's true. I definitely agree with them, but I think it's slightly different for someone who's reapplying versus someone who did a research year between their third and fourth year when they've already kind of been there for a year. So my thoughts on this are, if you did a research year between your third and fourth year of medical school, you basically had that year of research before you applied. And I think the expectation is that, yes, you should have, a lot of posters. You should have, manuscripts that are at least in process that you can talk about, research projects you can definitely talk about. When I was doing this research year, I started in July and I applied in October. And so I really only had a few months to try to reach this peak productivity that they were speaking of. And I remember when I was kind of trying to decide, should I do a research year or should I not? I reached out to people in other specialties who I know didn't match and did research years. And I asked them hey, how realistic is it to be getting publications out and all these posters out when you're only there for a few months by the time that you apply for your next cycle? And they said, it might not be that realistic depending on the research. The most important thing for you should be getting as many things submitted as you can, because you can list submitted things under that, you can list submitted things along with all of your publications on your ERAS application. It goes in a different category. Right. And the priority should be, making very strong connections with your department so that they can vouch for you in the upcoming match. So that was really what I prioritized. I tried to get As many abstracts submitted, I tried to get IRBs approved for new projects, and I presented that on my interviews as like, you know, tangible things that I've done. And I tried to make really strong connections with my department, knowing that, you know, applying this round, because I was only there for a few months, I wouldn't have like publications necessarily by the time I applied. But I know that by the end of my research year, I'll have definitely like a few manuscripts in process that'll probably be published down the line.
Definitely. And something that I guess I thought of, but I didn't really evaluate it too much, was that, you know, you have to apply. And for us, it was October, but you're going to be interviewing in December, November, December. And between that time, you might have more publications. So even though you're not, you know, stating maybe you have six publications or submitted publications on your application, you might have eight or nine by the time that you're interviewing with programs. So you do have a little bit more time. I don't know if you found that to be true, but
I did, yeah. And I did find that I had like other things that kind of reached like a tangible outcome that I could talk about on my interviews or present on my interviews. But yeah, so I agree with what you're saying.
Okay. And then something that the SAU mentioned was that, you know, try to get a research year. If you choose to do a research year, try to get one at a program that you'd be happy at, because, you know, you're going to be building a lot of relationships with those faculty, and your chances of matching at that program, you know, are higher than probably any other place in the country. So making sure to go to a program that you're passionate about, and also choosing a program that does produce high amounts of research. So look into the ones when you're applying, and trying to get into one that you can immediately get funneled into multiple active research projects. I don't know if you considered that while you were applying to these different research fellowships.
I definitely did. I think that is something to consider for sure. I think the reality is that there are so few research fellowships that I think people just end up applying to all of them. And I think that is the correct strategy to do, because you are competing with everyone else who didn't match or has decided to do your research year between their third and fourth year of medical school, things like that. The three things that I was really looking for in my research year, maybe more like two things, was that I was looking for a research year that had high success at matching people in urology in general. And I was looking at a research year that had high success of matching people at their particular institution. And so I felt that my current research fellowship really fit that bill. And that was kind of how I prioritized the places that I was applying to for research fellowship.
That's really helpful to hear about. And I am very ignorant on the process of applying to these. So you mind just like telling us a little bit about, you know, applying to all of these, what the acceptance looks like, and how that process works?
Sure. So for reapplicants, it's pretty simple for reapplicants, because you can pretty much just send them your ERAS application. So on your ERAS, there's an option that you can make your application into a PDF and download it. So I basically downloaded that, downloaded my personal statement, my dean's letter, and had those in PDF forms. And I sent them out to programs, or to the research fellowship programs. And then if they wanted a letter of interest, you can write a quick one page letter of interest about why you like urology, why you want to do the research fellowship. And then you can also send your letters of recommendation from your ERAS application to them. But I would suggest that, because you shouldn't be looking at your letters of recommendation, you should get like a trusted advisor, either your program director at your program or the program coordinator at your program, or just somebody else who has access to your letters from ERAS, to send those out so that they aren't, you know, tainted by your eyes or anything like that.
Exactly. And how does it work? I mean, if you apply to 15 different research fellowships, how does, you know, let's say three of them say, yeah, we'll take you. How do you go about that?
I would say go with your gut feeling and choose. Same thing with like when you're making your rank list for residency, go with your gut feeling for where you think you will be happiest at, where you think you'll be the most successful at doing research, but also achieving a good match, where you think the mentorship will be very good.
Awesome. And I just want to tell the listeners, if you don't know about it already, the Urology Excel Sheet online, you can find the link if you just Google Urology Excel Sheet 2020, 2021, has a page on there where people post all the different research opportunities, and they say whether they're still open and accepting applications or if they've been filled already. So it's a great great resource to find different opportunities. Twitter is also a great option. And a lot of the ones on the Excel sheet come from Twitter, But if you can't find the Excel sheet or something, going on Twitter and looking at different opportunities from there, you can look at the urology applicant, their Twitter. They post a lot of these opportunities as well. So you can find a lot of them there. And then for each of these opportunities, I wanted to just try to highlight the type of person where this option would work really well for. And I am, you know, a novice when it comes to this, but I try to create an applicant that a research year would be probably their best strategy. And obviously this is not, clear cut advice. You know, you have to make your own decisions, your own applicant, but I think it's helpful for someone to be like, okay, I fit this, characterization best. And I was thinking that from the SAU presentation yesterday and my own views, someone that definitely wants to do urology, doesn't think that they'd be happy in anything else, definitely wants to go into urology, or otherwise they don't want to be a doctor. Maybe they have pretty weak research on their application. They only have a publication or two, and that they know that they can be productive during a research year over the next coming months. That's a person that I could see a research year being very beneficial. I'm curious to hear your views as well.
Yeah, I agree with all that. The one con, although maybe it's not a complete con, depending on who you talk to, the one thing to consider with doing a urology research fellowship is that you're basically putting all of your eggs into the urology basket. And so I think you can dual apply general surgery, and you could probably be successful in getting general surgery interviews, but then you have to wonder or think about for your general surgery interviews, how are you going to frame your urology research year to these general surgeons who are interviewing you and who don't want to be your second choice. So that's something that I would consider if you're doing a urology research fellowship and dual applying. I think the other people who are research fellowship in urology would be great for, along with those who need research, are those who really need mentorship and who don't have a home program. If you don't have a home program at your medical school, I feel like, the week after match would probably be a little bit difficult because they aren't necessarily like just plugged in into the realities of the math, which they might be, but they might not. And so I think that doing a research fellowship, if you don't have a home program, could serve you very well because they're going to be a lot more plugged in. They're going to be a little bit better able and to mentor you and really want to mentor you as well.
Definitely. Yeah. You kind of get adopted and you have you're like an adopted child into their home program for a year. So.
I felt like I had two home programs who were kind of backing me up this cycle. So that felt pretty nice. But
yeah. And being a DO, I have some friends that are DOs that didn't match and we don't have home programs. So that's a great piece of advice, as a DO that you're kind of, all by your lonesome in regards to urology advice and mentorship. A research year would really allow you to, be adopted by one of these programs and have some resources available to you. So that's great advice.
Sure.
So the next option is scrambling. So unfortunately this year, there's no open spots. There's no open PGY1 spots. Duke and Cleveland Clinic do have open PGY2 spots. I'm not sure if they're still open, but if you have completed a PGY1 year, whether that's a general surgery prelim year, you could potentially apply to one of those PGY2 spots. But unfortunately the general scramble for urology this year isn't really open. And
correct.
Yeah. And then just the person that, might be best to scramble into this is, especially this year, somebody that's done a PGY1 year, but I'm curious to hear your perspective of somebody, or maybe it should be everybody, if there's open spots, everybody should try to scramble into those open spots.
Yeah, I think it depends on a lot of factors. I mean, for me, I was really willing to kind of go anywhere to do urology. And so location didn't really matter for me when it came to last year's scramble. And I would have wanted to scramble no matter where the location was. But for some people, location does really matter. Maybe they have families or kids, and maybe they don't necessarily want to scramble in whatever vacancies are left. And so I think it's kind of a personal decision you'd have to make, would it be better to scramble in whatever few options are left, or would it be better to just reapply later?
Definitely. Yeah, I think it's, yeah, definitely a personal decision. At least for me, I was kind of the same. I mean, I have a wife, so I had to consider where I was taking her. But being a DO applicant, I was like, oh my gosh, this is going to be really competitive for me. So I applied very broadly and said, you know, whatever happens, happens, and we'll figure it out. So that was my strategy.
Yeah, the other thing to consider is that the scramble for urology, it's not a formalized process like whatsoever. It isn't like the soap where, you know, they have a special program for the soap and usually you have your advisors kind of rallying behind you and you have other mentors who could also help you soap. Like the urology scramble is not formalized at all. You basically have to check that website to see if there's any vacancies. And sometimes all the vacancies aren't really listed there because there's a little bit of a delay. So then you kind of have to go by word of mouth to figure out where the vacancies are. And so it can be very stressful just trying to navigate all of that in the urology scramble too.
Definitely. So the next option I wanted to talk about was another big one, prelim year general surgery. So the benefits that the SAU was talking about was it gives you some clinical experience. It allows you to gain some maturity out in the medical field. And choosing this option allows you to slip into a potentially a PGY2 year if that's urology or another specialty. So you could potentially slip into a PGY2 year in general surgery. The caveat to that is that if you're going to slip into a PGY2 urology year, you need to meet the intern year urology residency requirements, which is the RRC and ABV requirements. I have no idea what they stand for, but you basically have to hit a certain number of urology rotations, which apparently some general surgery or prelim years offer those options. And then the downside of it being that it's really tough to get research in when you're busy with you know, out on the floors doing clinic stuff. So my view is the best person for a prelim year is someone that could see themselves doing something other than urology and could see themselves being happy in general surgery or a fellowship out of general surgery, but also somebody that's, you know, taking no breaks, is maybe young and could benefit from the extra year to show that they've, you know, spent some extra time, gained some maturity, they've gained some experience, and someone that also has, you know, a strong backup of strong research and scores to because, you know, you're obviously not going to be able to take your boards again, but this also isn't going to give you a great opportunity to do research. So if you feel like those parts of your application are strong, you can use this opportunity to, you know, network with people and gain some experience and maturity. What are your views about it?
Yeah, I agree with everything that you just said. I don't know if I have anything to add to that. I would say it's also probably very good for someone who's like extremely motivated. I know a few people who did do surgical prelims and they did end up, you know, making a great impression on their urology program that was at their new home institution for their prelim. And they did end up getting research. And so I think that those people are extremely motivated, extremely gritty, very hardworking. And so I think it's very good for those people too.
Yeah. And again, I think you need to look, you know, introspectively and be like, okay, if I do this prelim year, I am ready to work, you know, on the weekends that I have off and in the evenings when I have extra time to be able to work on maybe some other projects or really perform well on this prelim year. Because same thing with the research year, you know, and the advice that you gave, whatever you choose, you need to make sure that you're the type of person that's going to excel in that position. So do you have any advice on prelim years or did we cover that okay?
My advice on prelim year is hard because I haven't done a prelim year. I would say my advice would be to do one at a program that has a urology department that you can kind of plug into and to try to get urology rotations, at least one sort of early on in your prelim so that you can continue to make an impression with them. And so they can kind of take you under their wing as well. I know people who did prelims this year who didn't necessarily soap into their prelims. They made phone calls kind of in between the urology match and the soap process. You have to make sure that you're registered for the NRMP basically. But also you can call programs either at urology program, like the general surgery program at the urology program you interviewed at and tell them, hey, I interviewed for the urology program here. Unfortunately, didn't match, but would love to do a surgical prelim with you. Send them your application. And if they contact you and are interested in talking to you, you can send your ERAS app So that's also a way to kind of get a prelim sort of before the chaos of soap, if that's something that sounds good to people. And then the other benefit of doing that actually is that, so let's say you get a prelim and you find out on the Monday before match day that you match, but you don't necessarily know where, because they do it so that on Monday, right, you find out if you match or not, so you can soap if you need to. And then on Friday, you find out where you matched. So on Monday, you'll find out that you are partially matched technically with a prelim. And I think you're allowed to ask your dean, what is the location of my prelim? And that they'll tell you the location, like the city or the state, and then kind of give you an idea of what prelim you match to. But it could also help you see, you know, are there PGY2, are there advanced places that maybe I could soap into? I think that might be an option as well. Okay. You can try to reframe your soap into that if maybe there's other things you might be happy in that aren't necessarily urology, like an advanced position where they know that they start you at PGY2. Does that make sense? Like advanced anesthesia or advanced radiology?
Definitely. And they were also saying, you know, be clear and blatant about what you're looking for out of that prelim. So talk with the, you know, program director that's managing this prelim position and just say, hey, you know, I'm really excited to work hard at this prelim position. I'm going to try to match urology next year. And I really want to make sure that I'm, you know, meeting the requirements if there's a PGY2 spot that becomes available. And I want to make sure that I'm getting enough urology rotations to take advantage of this year. And that makes me nervous hearing about that and trying to have that conversation. But the program directors on the SAU meeting yesterday really reassured us that said, a lot of these people understand the position that you're in and are willing to support you, but you need to be clear about what you're trying to get out of this year. So do your best to do that, I guess.
Yeah, I agree with that. And, you know, I'm not sure how the letters of rec work for prelim, but I remember when I was considering prelims last year, I feel like I was told by one of the academic advisors that I don't necessarily have to change all my letters of rec. I don't necessarily have to change my urology personal statement, because they know that the prelim is not really the end goal here and that there's like something after the prelim. And so I think it's also maybe a point of solace for people who are trying to get all their materials together. They don't have to completely scrape everything when they're applying for this prelim.
Exactly. So the next two options that we're going to talk about, they're very similar, and it kind of depends on what preparation work you've done for this match cycle. And those two options are to match into something alternatively and to scramble into something alternatively. And I think, I guess I'll go over each of them first. So the alternative match is a position that I probably would have been in. I don't know necessarily what I would have decided if I didn't match urology, but I backup applied general surgery. So I was registered for the NRMP match. I'm interviewed at 11 places. So potentially I could have ranked those 11 places and attempted to match general surgery. And I think that's best for somebody that you can obviously see yourself enjoying something else. For me, I wasn't too excited about general surgery, but I knew that there was a lot of fellowships out of general surgery that I could enjoy. So that was a consideration of mine. And then I think a person that this would be good for is someone that might have a weaker urology application, somebody that, you know, didn't get a ton of interviews the first time around, maybe has poor scores, not a ton of research. And for me, it was a consideration because being a DO, it's really tough to understand my competitive ability in this match. And it would have taken some, you know, reflection and looking into my application a little bit more. But being a DO, at least unfortunately in my mind, is a weakness in of itself in a specialty like urology. So it's something that I would have considered. Do you think other attributes of a person would make them would you advise them to choose an alternative match, or did I cover that okay?
I think you covered that great. So you're talking about dual applying was kind of your experience. I would say dual applying was something that I actually did want to do this year. When it came down to it, I just didn't have the funds to kind of do both, and so I had to make a choice, and I obviously chose urology. But I would say dual applying is a great idea. You just kind of have to ask yourself, you know, how much are you willing to do to in order to, again, do urology as your first choice specialty versus, you know, starting your career. And I think that for people who, you know, even though urology is the first choice, if they really want to start their career right after medical school or right after research fellowship, or whatever their situation is, I think it would definitely be in their best interest to dual apply.
Definitely. And then the other small difference is scrambling into a different field. So this would be if you, you know, didn't dual apply back in October and you didn't do a bunch of interviews. But there is kind of an in-between here that they were talking about at the SAU meeting last night, was like, if you're registered for the NRMP, and it's a little confusing whether you can still register for it. I saw in the comments that you can still register until March 3rd.
Yes, I think it's just more expensive now because you're registering later, but you should be able to register until March 3rd. And so long as you're registered by March 3rd and your school like verifies that you've met all the requirements to match, then you should be able to soak even if your rank list is zero spots long.
Yeah. And they were saying that if you're registered for the match, I mean, you could go ahead and soap in March, but you could also over the next month reach out to your home program or, you know, people that you've met out in the field, whether that's in, you know, radiology or general surgery or family medicine or anesthesia, all of these different things, and try to get interviews over the next month. Because if you're able to obtain interviews, then you're able to submit a rank list. So just because you haven't had any interviews up until this point doesn't mean that over the next month you wouldn't be able to obtain some.
Correct. Yeah. And I think that's like a little known fact that I think people are learning about a lot now. But yeah, I would definitely recommend doing that. I know a lot of people have their spring rotations kind of set in stone by this time, but if you can change them to the things that you might be, you know, more interested in possibly doing with your life, like radiology or anesthesia or, you know, whatever that may be, then I would also recommend that. I mean, if your program has surgery prelims and you're still interested in that, you can totally go to the surgical prelim program director at your medical school and ask if he'd be willing to take you on.
Definitely. And the program directors that were part of this SAU meeting yesterday were reassuring us that, you know, it seems like a crapshoot reaching out to these programs in anesthesia, family medicine, general surgery, and being like, hey, can I get an interview with you guys? You know, after maybe they've finished all their interviews. And they were reassuring us and saying, you know, most likely, if you're applying urology, you have a pretty strong application. You have strong scores. You have good research. Your applications are very competitive. So if you're reaching out to a family medicine program or you're reaching out to an anesthesia program, a lot of those people will open their doors to you and maybe extend another interview to you because you're a competitive applicant and they would enjoy you at their institution. So keep in mind that you guys are good applicants, that you're worth something. And if you reach out to these programs, it might be a treat for them to interview you rather than a burden.
Yeah, I expect they would, most of them would welcome you with open arms.
Yeah. And then just the last little thing here is scrambling. So if you register for the NRMP, maybe you reach out to some people, but you're not able to obtain interviews, you can still go through the match process in the sense of soaping into any open slots in whatever specialty that has open spots.
Yes. Yes. And I think the thing to keep in mind, I didn't know a lot of things about the NRMP scramble until I didn't match, but I think good things to know about it is that you can apply, I believe, and correct me if I'm wrong, you can apply to, I think, 45 programs maximum. And the application should be free. Like, I don't think they'll charge you. So you can apply to all sorts of different specialties. It doesn't have to all be general surgery. You can do some gen surg, some peds, some internal medicine. And then the last thing I think it's important to know is that it's basically organized in rounds. And there isn't really like a match list algorithm going on. What happens is that if a program has two spots left, they will basically give two offers in the first round, and then those two people can either accept or reject. And if those two spots are still open, then the second round they can offer two more spots out. But it isn't like a rank list situation.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that is basically everything. Those are all the options. I guess I wanted to give you a chance give any piece of advice or peace of mind to the people that are going through this right now. I know it's very difficult, but if you just had any words of wisdom to help them through this difficult couple weeks, what would you say?
I think I would tell everyone that it was an extremely tough year for urology, that just because you didn't match doesn't mean that you can't add value to the field or to any other field. And that if you really want this, that perseverance can get you very far. It got me very far. And I think it's also important as well to reach out to any trusted mentors to get kind of realistic assessments about how you're doing, but also self-reflect about things you can improve, as well as other things that you might be happy in. But at the end of the day, you know, this people go unmatched in all different specialties, in the regular match, in the urology match, in the opto match, and they do find a way forward. So there is a path forward here. This isn't the worst thing that's going to happen to you. And I believe that you will all bounce back and be great.
Well, that's really good to hear. Is there a way, if you want them to, for people to reach out and contact you for advice and guidance?
Anyone can DM me on Twitter. My handle is Sarah Vidovich MD.
Okay, perfect. And I'll sign out here. I just wanted to say thank you so much for taking this time to go over this. I know this is a stressful process for everybody. It's a process that I'm not very familiar with, so it was helpful to go to the SAU meeting yesterday and talk with you today. And I just really appreciate you taking the time to help guide people that heard some poor news on Monday. So thank you so much.
Thank you for having me. It was a pleasure.
Yeah. So to everyone listening, thanks for listening. If you have any questions, you can email me at rodsquadpod@gmail.com. You can go to my website at rodsquadpod.com, or you can go to my Twitter and reach out to me there at rodsquadpod. So I've had a bunch of third years reach out to me. I've had some people that haven't matched that reach out to me. I have some opportunities with my podcast that you guys can get involved with and help me in regards to that as well. They're great opportunities, maybe not for your application because it's not technically research, but they're great opportunities for you to talk about in your interviews. And I would love to have you help out on my small team working on this podcast. So to everybody, thank you for listening. I hope you guys are doing well. And take care.